Could you please switch on the light again? It's off now. Thank you.
Right, z minus 1 over side of the skin camera. Can enter inside here, and we can, after integration over Z, we will just get here 1 over n. And so because these are all equivalent, so it's one in the same process, you can just write this as a, and this becomes a product. And this is nothing but a characteristic function of one, what is x. Okay, so now we want to approximate this characteristic function. So we write P of x e to the power x over n dx. And we add and subtract mean of dx. So we just add a 0. Now this can be seen as like the n over n. It doesn't depend on x anymore. P of x e to the I of k over n x minus mu dx. And now we can expand exponential. So we get 1 plus I k over n c minus mu minus, because we have k squared over n squared x minus mu squared half plus some other order terms. Patient werde vaccinieren. So, we are left with EU over n times 1 minus k squared over 2 n squared times. We put this expanded form back to the bracket, and we get k is e to the k nu times 1 minus the percent n squared plus o of k and q. So, and in the limit of large n, this is approximately e to the minus k squared. So you use the okay, now we know this. We know how our characteristic function looks. And we want to go back to our distribution. So now distribution is just inverse Fourier transform. Becomes e to the minus k z minus mu minus k squared z squared. Into the form which we know how to integrate. So we get times C. This will be K sigma over square root of 2m. So we have K here. We are missing one sigma. So sigma over sigma and square root of 2m times square root of 2m. And I so now we have 2 times k sigma over 2 square root of n, and we have to subtract and add the square of this. So we have 2n of the square of what is left, 4 sigma squared. I squared is minus 1, plus 1 over 4 squared is mu squared. Okay.
Could you please not use more than half of the table, because I didn't...
Uh-huh.
It's possible, but you couldn't read it properly afterwards.
Oh,
if it's too
should
wide.
Should I rewrite it?
No, but the next line.
So now we see that this is this part here will just be k sigma over square root of 2 and plus e n over 2 sigma is minus mu squared and minus plus to the power of 2 for the
that minus
mu
plus square.
Ah, that's right. Well, square comes minus n over 2 sigma squared. And great, now we know how to integrate it. So our integral
should be plus 10 over 2.
No, because we have plus here and minus here.
Ah, okay.
So this term doesn't depend on k, we just take it out. E to the minus n over 2 sigma squared minus mu squared. And or to the left. Minus infinity to the minus k sigma over 2 square root of 2n plus square root And okay, so if you just we change variable from k to q, or this is q, then we see that okay, this is just square root of pi. And I forgot this 2 pi somewhere in the way. So, 2 pi. And but this is just a normal. And basically, I mean, this means that also your sum will be distributed as a Gaussian, just that the expectation value will be n times mu in this case. And a number of measurements of some product of some system, I don't know. Whatever you can measure, then basically in order to increase the certainty for the certainty of increase the number of so to increase the certainty for 2, you have to increase the number of measurements by the factor of 4. So. Because standard deviation scales as sigma over square root of n. So in a way, whenever you measure something, you have many different processes which somehow disturb these measurements. So, and you also can assume that they are independent. So your measurement error, in a way, will be distributed. This Gaussian also. which won't be case if they are not independent variables. And, well, lucky for us, in nature, I mean, this is usually the case. Well, not usually, but at least in the complex systems where we work. So Gaussian distribution is not usually a very good model. And one has to think of the other ways how to model a, or to estimate a probability distribution of the underlying system, so which you analyze, study, and now we will talk about this. So basically, of characterization of time series. So, for example, if you remember a logistic process which you studied in the previous chapter. We use this logistical equation, and I mean, as you see, I mean, you cannot. There is no really way to assume. Well, maybe there is, but it's not that easy to assume what will the this probability distribution of x looks like. So, as a function of parameter r. So, okay, when you are in this order phase, so. Where was the limit? R minus 3 point something. R smaller than 3 point something. So you have only finite number of fixed points in the system. So in this case, it's quite easy to formulate what the probability distribution will be. So it's system is basically just in one of these fixed points. But once you go to chaotic phase, this can be quite complicated. And if you assume that you have some distribution, you can make lots of error if this assumption is wrong. I mean. So again, this Bayesian method, it's hard to apply in this kind of problems. But you don't know much about underlying processes. And so in this situation, one usually uses non-parametric approach. And so how much time do I have? 10 minutes. Okay. So I prepared some slides to show you this. So. But let me just
tell you first a little bit about theory. So the easiest way what one can do is just to make a histogram of the data you see. So this will generate some data set, let's call it X. And you will get some points like from x1 to x, let's call it t. Then what you can do, you say, well, you know that the system is limited also on the area from 0 to 1. And you just divide this area into the bins of fixed width. And now you count, let's say if this is a bin, eat bin, you count how many times system visited this bin, divide the total number of data points you have, and you get the probability. So probability that X will be in a eat bin is just Ni over, so in our case, the number of total points. And from this, you can get a density, an approximation of a density function. So your P of X will be Ne over T divided by the width of the bin. So let's call it delta I for every x inside this interval. So what you get in the end is some, so like ladder-like function, which is constant inside this interval.
Delta I would be the length of each bin.
Yeah, delta I would be the length of it. And I mean, usually they don't have to be the same width, but usually you just use the, that they are all same. And we will see later, so when we talk about information entropy and different things, I mean, what kind of problems this can create if your bins are somehow different lengths and stuff. But actually, sometimes it's quite useful to use you need bins of different lengths. So for example, let's say if we have a distribution, so this is the real distribution of the process. So let's assume we know it. And now if we want to model this with a histogram, if we use the width of the same length, we need lots of measurements to get these areas of low probability. So that in order for system to visit this area, it's like highly improbable, so you need very large sets to go there. If you don't have a large set, then you will have some like noise like structure here. So it won't model the probability distribution good in this region. So what you can do is then you increase the size of the bin here in this region, but you decrease it, for example, here where the where the data points are denser. Okay, so this would be a histogram method. is the something. I mean, it's quite useful. So I will mention one, two more approaches how you can solve this. And actually, so although it's not so nice because you have this discontinuities, advantage of this approach is that you can like discard completely the data set once you made a histogram. And so in the following method, so it's called kernel estimation. So this is not the case. So what actually, what this tells us, let's say, we have a probability density function, and basically a probability that we will enter some small volume. Okay, this can also be a multidimensional variable. So. Probability that you will be inside some volume in this multidimensional space is given by this relation P. And so if your data set is large enough, you can actually estimate this P by number of times system enter this volume divided by the total number of measurements. Well, if you also assume that this is very small area, then you can approximate also this integral just by delta V times P of x, which is equal to here. And so you get approximation of your density function from the data. So what actually kernel method gives a nice way how you can estimate this k. So you can define the kernel function, let's call it k of u, which is 1 if all the components of the vector u are smaller than 1/2, so absolute value, and 0 otherwise. And you can use this kernel function to count the number of points around some number of data points around some fixed point in space. So basically what this means, let's say if we fix x here, we just consider one dimensional case. So x is 0, and we have some data points we got from the observation. This function will be 1 for all points which are inside this interval. And basically, when you sum them, you get the number of points. So for minus h half plus h half around some fixed points in space.
Then xn is the data point.
No, xn is the data point. So the value of, so if we have one dimensional set, this should just be the value of this. So where this falls? So you basically you estimate the distance from x, and if distance is smaller, so it's smaller than h half, you will get 1.
Then x is the fixed.
Yes, exactly. X is the so you fix x. So in this way you define a hypercube in the of the side H in multidimensional space. And now we just use this formula, we get P of X, our density function is just given as 1 over n sum over all data points. Okay, number of data points is t for this case, times kx minus xn over h, and divided by the volume. And in case of the hypercube, volume is just h times the dimension of the space you work. So in this case, it will just be h in one-dimensional case. So, but actually this, if you look at this, I mean, you can just now variate over x, and actually this gives you a different interpretation. So basically you, what you are doing is that you assume that every point you get is will like give you a certain distribution around it. So uniform distribution in this case of width h, and then you sum over all these distributions and average, and you get your density estimation. Okay, just two more things to say. And okay, so if you use a hypercube, you will still have the discontinuities because the kernel function you assume is not smooth in entire space. So what one does usually, if you for some reason need a smooth density function, you can instead of this use a Gaussian kernel, where your kernel function is just now a Gaussian. So you sum over e to the minus to x squared. So basically you assume that every point you got somehow introduces a Gaussian distribution around itself. So there is certain uncertainty about Gaussian uncertainty around each of these points you get. And then when you sum all these Gaussians and average over number of Gaussians you have, you get well, probability density function estimate. So, and in this case, it will be smooth.
How do you calculate the fixed point?
The fixed point? What do you mean?
Then you would have this function for every data point. I mean, the fixed point is that you put the kernel on.
Yeah.
And then you calculate that, and then you put the kernel 1 point further.
Yeah, exactly.
And then how would you calculate the x in the fixed point?
Well, from the data. I mean, xn is point from the data, and x is just entire space.
Yeah.
So basically, each of these Gaussian gives certain contribution to a point x in the space. And then you average over all these contributions. OK. Yeah, so and after the break, I will show you how you can do this. OK. So let's see examples of what I was talking about before the break. So for start, we can. OK, so this is, you know Mathematica? No? Yes? OK. I generated, let's start, we know that, let's assume that we know the underlying distribution. And let it be, so normal distribution with mean 0 and variance sigma. Maybe I can use pointers. Great. And generate 1,000 data points. I mean, this is not, for Gaussian, not sufficient, but. A mouse?
Yeah.
How do I?
Do it without a table. I mean, just have to put this into the computer.
Okay. I didn't know this is so complicated. So I. Oh, really? Okay, how this works? Funny, okay. okay, so we generated 1,000 data points from Gaussian distribution with variance 1. Yeah. So standard deviation 1. Yeah, variance is 1. Both are 1. Then I have to click here now, and this is quite.
You can click on the mouse too.
Yeah, I know, but it's hard without.
Yeah, sure.
And now we can make a histogram from the data. Let's say on the range from minus 3 to 3, and each bin has a width 0.1. So then in total, there will be 60 bins. And so we compare the green line. Is the real distribution, is the real density function, so Gaussian, and this is what we get for the histogram. Now, of course, if you decrease the size of the width, I mean, eventually you will have the problem that if the data size is too small, you will just get some noisy probability, probability density function. And on the other hand, if you set bin size too large, yeah, this won't look like anything, basically. So, for example, if we set bin size to, let's say, 3, so we have only 2 bins, of course, so we don't get anything. You cannot extract the structure from the data, and you will just over-smooth whatever you are measuring. Okay, let's see example of some smaller bin. How will this look like? Is that? As you can see, netbook is not so fast. Yeah. Again, not so nice. I mean, quite a noisy density function. Not very useful. I mean, okay, this is also a reason why I work with only 1,000 data points. Because to change anything in the netbook is quite a long process. And So besides histogram, we can define this kernel function. So this would be a Gaussian kernel. And so this would be just step function. So can I call it step kernel? Maybe. And again, okay, so no, this is not that important. This is just the code to estimate the function. And as we can see, so the if you use the Gaussian kernel, this will be this red line. It's quite smooth. And of course, if you need, so you would need this, for example, if you somehow need to differentiate the probability distribution. So and again, if you use this so kernel bin-like kernel, then you will. It somehow it follows quite close histogram. It's a little bit smoother, but still you have all these spikes around. So any differentiation will just bring you lots of problems here. And again, by changing the parameters of the kernel function, such as so the for the bin width. So for example, for Gaussian, I used standard deviation 0.5. I mean, you can do this smaller. Doesn't really. If you go again too small, you will get noisy density function. It will be smooth, but still noisy. And if you go to a larger, you will just, I mean, end up, you know, you will in some wrong estimation again. And similar goes for this bin-like kernel. And okay, it's, so let's now try to.
Excuse me, what you said before, if it's smaller, it would have more noise. Which variable?
The
data points?
The h. So basically, it defines the deviation of the Gaussian you use, or so if your Gaussian is very narrow compared to the, I mean, of course, the amount of, if you have lots of data, you can make this narrower. If you have smaller data sets, then your Gaussian should be a little bit wider. Yeah, but again, there is no some really rule how to estimate this. So you have to play a little bit until you see, I mean, something which satisfies you. I mean, that's whatever you want to show from the data. I mean, if you can get some structure or not. So, but I mean, h would be here the deviation of the Gaussian, and in the case in case of this this other kernel function, h would be just the width of the kernel you are assuming. So now you have just a discrete jump. I mean, I could now play with h, but this takes quite a lot of time so to calculate using netbook. So okay, let's just see. We can generate now data from the logistic map. We start at some point, let's say 0.6, and we set R to 3.6. This should be in a chaotic regime. And for 1,000 data points, histogram gives you something like this. As you can see, there is, it looks like system never goes here. And also, so this is 0.3 here. It never goes below 0.3 also, or above 0.9. So it doesn't visit the full space. And we can see, so when we apply the same kernel methods to the same problem, what happens. So
what is the real distribution?
We don't know it. So, I mean, you don't know the real distribution of the logistic map. I mean, at least not the generating. So it generates the process. No. And of course, this will become quite different if you change R, for example. You set R 3.6, now it changes to 3.8. We will get quite different distribution. You cannot write this in a functional form. So if you don't want to use this non-parametric approach, but you want somehow to, so example, the problem with non-parametric approach, for example, this kernel estimation, is that you have to save all these data points. So you have to save all data points to estimate the distribution. And every time you do an estimate around some points, you have to, again, do this for very long sums. And this is computationally expensive. So, I mean, sometimes you just want to work with something which has much less like dimensions. So, for example, you can parameterize this by some mixture of Gaussians. And then again, you would use this Bayesian approach to estimate the values of parameters of each Gaussian and such things. So you would, for example, assume you have a mixture of four Gaussian functions. And then from the data, you will somehow mix them. But again, you will lose lots of structure then. Because if underlying process is not exactly this. And so, well, the advantage of the histogram method is in a way that it's faster than if you use kernel method. But also, if you use histogram method, you will have a problem if your data is multidimensional. So basically, if you just define bins in multidimensional data, if you are in d-dimensional space, number of possible bins would be mu to the d, basically, number of possible states. Let's make now a break and change it. I don't need slides anymore. Good. So let's say in one dimension we divide, let's say, interval 0 to 1 into m bins. Now in two dimensions, again, you could work in the same space, doesn't matter, you would divide the other axis again in m bins, so in total your space would be m, so the total number of bins would be m squared. If you continue this to like d-dimensional space, number of bins would be m to the d. And so, for example, quite obvious if, quite often you could work with like 100-dimensional data points. So, for example, if you measure the electroactivity of brain waves, so you would have like, for example, 100 electrodes around the head, you get basically 100-dimensional data points. And if you just use histogram method to estimate this, you would need really, really like infinitely long data sets basically to properly estimate the histogram. So even if you divide, like if you have only like 10 bins, this would be 10 to the 100, like a really huge number of possible states. So in order to system to that you are sure that system can go in every possible state sufficient amount of time, you need really large data sets. And I mean, these kernel methods scale better with the dimension of data points. But they scale worse with the dimension of data sets. This is like depends from what you really want to do. Okay, so now beside this, you could just symbolize your data. For example, you look for a certain structure in your time series. Let's say we have something like this, and you assigned certain symbolic value to this structure. So for example, you could just say if it time t, my data, so let's say this is like x axis, this is time. So at some time t, we are here. At t plus 1, we are here. Then you could say that whenever you observe this in data points, you assign 0 to it. Or when you observe like descent, you assign like 1 to it. So you basically in a way you binarize your time series. So now from here you would just get like series of zeros and ones. And then I mean you work with this data set. So basically you just have binary variable and now you can estimate the probability of a variable. So now it's not x, but let's call it alpha is 0, will be something, and probability of alpha 1 is just 1 minus alpha equals 0. Basically, this will tell you what is the probability that the time series will grow or like fall down. And then you could extend this so by looking at the words of length 2. So for example, you could estimate the probability of a time series going up twice in a row, and probability of going up and down, or increasing and decreasing, or decreasing twice in a row. And then you extend this off. And of course, you can, when you symbolize data, you could look for more complicated structures. So you could say, the symbolization could begin like when you look. So you could call this behavior 0, then you call this one 1, then you could also go from up down, it would be 2, and twice descending would be 3, and so on. And again, you can make it more complex and complex. You get basically more detailed information about your time series. And as we will see, this is useful in for example, information theory, if you would like, if you want to estimate the predictability of a time series, I mean, this symbolization is useful simplification of a time series. So it still contains certain information. I mean, you lose lots of information here, of course, about the underlying process, but for example, it contains a little, some information about the predictability of this time series. So basically, if you are in some point here, can you predict where the system will be at some time, t plus tau? But I mean, there are different methods to do this. I mean, you guys use information theory, or you can work with, you can estimate the Lyapunov exponent of the time series, and this will also tell you the predictability. And so on. So now all this depends from the exactly. The problem one works with, and the, what kind of information you want to extract from the studied system. So, for example, there is example here in the book. So you could generate, you could do the same for the logistic map. And what was done is the book. Again, you have generated for like sample 1 million data points. And then estimated, so plus 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 minus. So probability to see accent in data 2 times, accent descent, and so increase and decrease and so on. P minus plus and P minus minus. So and they use like R equals 3.6. And how this looks like, see, this is 0.2, 0.4. It seems that probability to observe x increasing, so 2 times in a row, is around 0.2. Increasing and decreasing and decreasing and increasing is the same approximate, so around 0.4. And this one is 0. So this is, for example, if interesting information you get such a way from the system. So you cannot observe the, for example, this kind of this kind of behavior. And so there are several additional problems when studying time series. So one of them would be self-averaging. This would mean that the in a way time series doesn't depend on the initial condition. So the distribution generating time series won't depend on the initial condition. And of course, this is not always the case. So for example, if you have a more than one attractor in the phase space, and by choosing the initial conditions, you will end in one of them only. They are still stable, and if there is no noise in the system. So if you want to fully sample the phase space, then you would have to repeat the process for many initial conditions, different initial conditions. But again, in real world experiments, this is not usually possible. So for example, if you want to study meteorology, so you have just one set of data, one history of the weather in an area, and you cannot change the initial condition to see how this behaves. And a simple example of this would be XOR series. So you can just so XOR actually. XOR. For example, we have a binary variable. Okay, should we use sigma? Let's use some other. Let's call it A. And you define a XOR process, so A at the, so A is just 0 of 1. XOR process is, so the next time step is given by the value of A, and the next time step is given by the value XOR function of value of A in the previous time step, and minus 1 times. So I don't know if you know what XOR is. So basically, just write it here. So this will be 1 when AT is different from AT minus 1 and 0 otherwise, so when they are the same. So basically, if this AT plus 1 will be 1 only if this is 0, 1 or 1, 0. And now you can see we have like four possible initial conditions. So 0, 0, 0, 1, 1, 0, and 1, 1. And which one? So 0, 0 is in a way a fixed point, so you will just remain here for a very long time. Infinitely long. And also, I mean, all the other fixed point, or other initial conditions end in different fixed points, so you will go 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, and so on. Same here, so you will, if you start from 0, 1, 0, you will go 1, 1, 0, 1, 1, and so on. And if you start from here, again, you will end up in the same attractors. So this kind of process is not self-averaging. So it depends on the initial conditions. Time series depends on the initial conditions. Most probably you will, if you choose just like randomly initial conditions, you will end up in this attractor. and there probability of getting 0 is 1/3. The probability of seeing 1 is 2/3. And in this subtractor, we have probability seeing 0 is 1, and probability of seeing 1 is 0. But now, if you would average over all initial conditions, you would get different distributions. So. So basically, so what you get is the probability of seeing 0 is so it will be, I think, 2/3. Multiply this with 3. Okay, let's call this P1, P1, P2, and P2. So probability of seeing 0 in average and or initial condition will be P1 of 0 plus 3 times P2 of 0 divided by 4. And same P of 1. That will be P1 of 1 times 3 P1 of 1 divided by 4. See, this is 1/2. Yeah, this has to be 1/2. Okay, so and you could actually turn this process into self-averaging XOR by introducing noise. So for example, you say that A of T plus 1 is XOR of AT minus 1 with probability 1 minus Xi. And opposite from this, so negative XOR, or neg XOR, AT minus 1 with probability C. And so, I mean, what this means that if you start from this initial condition, eventually, due to the noise, you will be shifted to this attractor. And vice versa. I mean, when you are in this attractor, noise will induce perturbation, which actually shifts you to a different attractor. And over a very long time series, this will like average out, and you will end up in the same, in this limit. And I mean, this is not generally the case. So I think use OR function instead of XOR, this won't happen. But but actually, this I mean, in case so for when this is the case, so a noise self-average introduction of noise self-averages the process, so you can see how this is useful to extract the properties of the system. And it's usually assumed that sometimes noise is quite, it's useful to have noise in the system so that it can behave properly. Noise. I mean, for example, you just generate data. Yeah, but I mean, I just counted, so in a way. I mean, you would do this. You start some 0, 0, 0, 0, and at some point this 0 would be shifted to 1 and you will end up in the different detractor. So you will get then 1, 0, 1, 1, 0, and so, okay, in this case, so for example, if perturbations, so noise happens after 0, so you will end up back in this attractor. But if, for example, you perturb the 0, nothing will happen. So you will still remain. You will still remain in the same attractor. Or if you perturb the last one here, so let's say like this, again, you won't escape. I mean, how? So, what you would just? You mean just for from this estimate of? But I mean, this is it, isn't it? I mean, you have to. You just analyze what happens. And I mean, you can see that the probability to get from 0, 0, 0 attractor to 1, 0, 1, 1, 0 is just psi, and to get back is psi over 3, so 3 times less. I mean, if you average this over like very long time series, you will just end up in this result. Because I mean, around this attractor, you will get this distribution. If you are here, this will generate this kind of distribution. And because it's like 3 times more probable that you are around this attractor, you just multiply this with 3. I mean, this is. Over? Yeah, perfect. Perfect, yeah. So we are continuing this time with